Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Monday, June 10, 2013. Besides mine, you'll hear two voices on today's News and Comment podcast, Barack Obama and Ed Snowden.
Hello, NSA. I just called you to say I love you.
I love you.
Because you really listen.
Over the weekend, we learned the source of Glenn Greenwald's leaked documents.
Now when I'm on the phone, will I never feel alone? 'Cause you're out there with your headphones.
Hello.
And you really listen.
Ed Snowden is about to become an American household word. He is the leaker who revealed the court order from the FISA court requiring Verizon Communications to turn over every telephone record every day on an ongoing basis. And here is the most powerful statement he made in an exclusive interview with Glenn Greenwald from a hotel room in Hong Kong, where he is currently on the lam.
Any analyst at any time can target anyone, any selector, anywhere.
It's a stunning statement. Any analyst at any time can target anyone, anywhere. And he says that from his desk, when he was working just last week at Booz Allen Hamilton, the corporate consulting firm whose main client, almost sole client, is the U.S. government, he said, from my desk, I have the authorities to wiretap anyone, even the president. Now, in a moment, you're going to hear Barack Obama defend the secret surveillance policies, some of which he inherited, most of which he cemented and expanded. And the simple question I put to you as you listen to this podcast, maybe you want to wait until it's all over, but do you believe Ed Snowden, or do you believe the carefully calibrated denials of the president and his team? Because Ed Snowden has not just ruined his vacation, he's given up his entire future. He's 29 years old. He didn't graduate from college, but he's some sort of an internet whiz, because he first worked for the CIA and then in the private sector at the public trough, working for Booz Allen Hamilton. He describes a comfortable life in Hawaii, living in a nice home. Makes it sound like he was paid too much money for his own tastes. But he decided that we needed to know about this, and that his life, his future, is expendable because of the drastic, dire need to warn the American people. This is not like Paul Revere riding, making church bells ring. This is truly a shot heard round the world. And it was fired from Hong Kong, where it appears that this young man has miscalculated, that Ed Snowden thought that Hong Kong might not extradite him to the United States, but there is a treaty between Hong Kong, not even the Beijing government, but Hong Kong and the U.S., and several individuals have been extradited just in the last 10 years. His own fate aside, I'd like you to listen here to these excerpts of the video interview that Ed Snowden gave to Glenn Greenwald. It was recorded last Friday and released on Sunday. And it's extremely powerful what this man has to say. That over time, being exposed to all of our secrets, including those that cover up abuses, law-breaking, unconstitutional behavior, It just became too much. And his cohorts, his colleagues, were blasé about it. So he decided to be the guy who puts his own life at great risk, and he knows what the government machinery can do. You'll hear him say that I could be rendered by the CIA. And he said, I fear I will live, it's fear that I will live under for the rest of my life, however long that happens to be. That's a little bit chilling. Listen now, here are the highlights of the interview between Glenn Greenwald and Ed Snowden.
Any analyst at any time can target anyone, any selector anywhere. Where those communications will be picked up depends on the range of the sensor networks and the authorities that that analyst is empowered with. Not all analysts have the ability to target everything, but I, sitting at my desk, certainly had the authorities to wiretap anyone, from you or your accountant to a federal judge to even the president if I had a personal email. When you see everything, you see them on a more frequent basis. And you recognize that some of these things are actually abuses. And when you talk to people about them, in a place like this, where this is the normal state of business, people tend not to take them very seriously and, you know, move on from them. But over time, that awareness of wrongdoing sort of builds up, and you feel compelled to talk about it. And the more you talk about it, the more you're ignored, the more you're told it's not a problem. Until eventually you realize that these things need to be determined by the public, not by somebody who was simply hired by the government. NSA and the intelligence community in general is focused on getting intelligence wherever it can, by any means possible, that it believes, on the grounds of sort of a self-certification, that they serve the national interest. Originally, we saw that focus very narrowly tailored as foreign intelligence gathered overseas. Now, increasingly, we see that it's happening domestically. And to do that, the NSA specifically, targets the communications of everyone. It ingests them by default. It collects them in its system, and it filters them, and it analyzes them, and it measures them, and it stores them for periods of time, simply because that's the easiest, most efficient, and most valuable way to achieve these ends. So while they may be intending to target someone associated with a foreign government or someone that they suspect of terrorism, they're collecting your communications to do so. They're typically maligned. You know, it becomes a thing of these people are against the country, they're against the government, but I'm not. I'm no different from anybody else. I don't have special skills. I'm just another guy who sits there day to day in the office, watches what's happening, and goes, this is something that's not our place to decide. The public needs to decide whether these programs and policies are right or wrong. And I'm willing to go on the record to defend the authenticity of them and say, I didn't change these. I didn't modify the story. This is the truth. This is what's happening. You should decide whether we need to be doing this. Yeah, I could be, you know, rendered by the CIA. I could have people come after me or any of their third-party partners. You know, they work closely with a number of other nations. Or, you know, they could pay off the triads or, you know, any of their agents or assets. We've got a CIA station just up the road in the consulate here in Hong Kong. And I'm sure they're going to be very busy for the next week. And that's a fear I'll live under for the rest of my life, however long that happens to be. If you realize that that's the world that you helped create, and it's going to get worse with the next generation and the next generation who extend the capabilities of this sort of architecture of oppression, you realize that you might be willing to accept any risk, and it doesn't matter what the outcome is, so long as the public gets to make their own decisions about how that's applied. Because even if you're not doing anything wrong, you're being watched and recorded, and the storage capability of these systems increases every year consistently by orders of magnitude, to where it's getting to the point you don't have to have done anything wrong. You simply have to eventually fall under suspicion from somebody, even by a wrong call, and then they can use the system to go back in time and scrutinize every decision you've ever made, every friend you've ever discussed something with, and attack you on that basis, to sort of derive suspicion from an innocent life and paint anyone in the context of a wrongdoer. The greatest fear that I have regarding the outcome for America of these disclosures is that nothing will change. A new leader will be elected. They'll flip the switch, say that because of the crisis, because of the dangers that we face in the world, you know, some new and unpredicted threat, we need more authority. We need more power. And there will be nothing the people can do at that point to oppose it. And it'll be turnkey tyranny.
That's Ed Snowden, the 29-year-old former CIA, former Booz Allen Hamilton employee. I guess he still works at Booz Allen Hamilton. He just took a leave from there, but that won't last long. And his most powerful comment is a very simple one. His greatest fear is that nothing will change. And it's a well-founded fear. Because the American people are so passive and happy to say, oh, well, you know, I don't have anything to hide. And Ed Snowden took that head on. He said, well, even if you're not doing anything wrong, they can frame you. They can build a case around you with the vast amounts of information that they're now collecting and sifting through. And my own attitudes toward this are shaped by what's considered ancient history. In the 1970s, I hosted a talk show in Chicago. We covered the Black Panther raid that was staged by the FBI and the Chicago police, and as I learned more and more about it, we concluded that it was state-sponsored murder. They infiltrated the Panthers, had a map of the apartment where Fred Hampton was sleeping. They were able to kill him, but not his pregnant girlfriend sleeping right next to him. And it shaped my view of the police state potential here in my country. And in the 70s, we had the Church Commission. We thought that it was behind us. We had boxed it up and said, we will not do that again. After 9/11, George W. Bush, enabled by James Sensenbrenner, Republican, the House Judiciary Committee, they unboxed COINTELPRO and brought us 2.0, revved up for the cyber era. So on Friday, the president, I'll give him credit, he could have ducked the question. And as you'll hear, he agreed to accept one question, and then a second was shouted out, and he came back to the podium to answer it. But he was here in Silicon Valley, in San Jose, California. And it's ironic because they had scheduled this brief press availability because there had been a howl of complaints that the president came to California simply to pick up campaign cash. He did, of course, have the weekend informal summit with the new president of China, Xi, at the old Annenberg estate near Palm Springs. And so before all of the Greenwald leaks had occurred, they were planning just to do a little photo op about Obamacare and how California is ready to implement it. And it's actually looking much better than I had thought in terms of access, costs, the opportunities. But he was asked a question about the leaks of the NSA activities, followed by the PRISM program leaking with access to the main internet companies, including the big search engines, Google and Yahoo, Facebook too. And so I'm going to play portions of the president's remarks and talk back to them, offering my jaded point of view.
A few days ago.
When it comes to telephone calls, nobody is listening to your telephone calls. That's not what this program's about. As was indicated, what the intelligence community is doing is looking at phone numbers and durations of calls. They are not looking at people's names, and they're not looking at content.
So we are supposed to rest assured by the president's remarks here. Now, it's in the context of this program, the phone records program, and nobody has alleged that the specific FISA court order to Verizon to turn over the phone records included orders enabling somebody to listen to those calls. But the president is not being honest. It is disingenuous. And let me once again quote Ed Snowden from his desk. He said, any analyst at any time can target anyone, anywhere. We know that they are collecting and keeping in the massive server farms, these data centers, all of the electronic communications they capture. We know about the switch at the phone center of AT&T in San Francisco that diverts all of that traffic to an NSA recording system. And even if you take the president's comments at face value, the collection of who called whom and how long they talked, together with the metadata from our cell phones, which tells exactly where we are, what kind of device we used, they can piece that together with our credit card records and all the other data that they are mining on us. And it amounts to a violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. Now, they try to pretend that actions of Congress can overcome the constitutional defects of these massive collection programs that, you know, predominantly target completely innocent people. Let's let the president talk some more.
But by sifting through this so-called metadata, they may identify potential leads with respect to folks who might engage in terrorism. If these folks, if the intelligence community then actually wants to listen to a phone call, they've got to go back to a federal judge.
Now, the president makes it sound like they go to any old federal judge and that this is a real healthy adversarial process. That's bullshit. They go to the FISA court, which never turns down a request for a wiretap or other electronic surveillance. And the evidence the government provides is secret. The ruling is secret. And the individual who is being targeted has no way to know that they even need to defend themselves, much less being able to defend themselves. So this talk about judicial and congressional oversight is simply misleading. The president knows he is spinning. He knows that he has crossed the line into lying. And just because he's a Democrat and he's better than McCain, better than Mitt Romney, doesn't mean that somebody like me sits back and says, well, I won't call him a liar because, you know, he knows how to say nuclear. He's smarter than these other guys. Sorry, a lie is a lie, and that's what I'm hearing this president utter.
Just like they would in a criminal investigation. So I want to be very clear. Some of the hype that we've been hearing over the last day or so, nobody's listening to the content of people's phone calls.
Now, that is not true to say nobody's listening to the content of phone calls. I don't believe they're listening to every call. But as I've pointed out, the phone records give them a roadmap, an index to where to look for that call. Say, Peter B. talked to some guy in Saudi Arabia. I wonder what they're talking about. Well, as Ed Snowden told us, any analyst at any time can target anyone, anywhere. So I'm not persuaded by the president's commentary here.
This program, by the way, is fully overseen not just by Congress, but by the FISA court.
Now, once again, the president knows that's not true. Fully overseen by the Congress? No. Most members of Congress are in the dark on these secret programs. Members of the Senate and House Intelligence Committees and the top leadership in each house have likely been briefed to some extent. But to say that there has been full congressional oversight, that's a lie. And part of it is the fault of Congress. It has failed to assert its powers of oversight, except on trivial matters like Fast and Furious and finger-pointing over Benghazi. And so when we hear, you know, congressional and judicial oversight, and the judicial oversight is the FISA court, I'm sorry, those don't meet fundamental standards of honest definitions of the term full oversight.
A court specially put together to evaluate classified programs to make sure that the executive branch or government generally is not abusing them and that they're, it's being carried out consistent with the Constitution.
Now, listen to that phrase, consistent with. He doesn't say it complies with the Constitution. And the other usage of the phrase consistent with came from this president when he tried to say that the last election in Afghanistan that reelected Hamid Karzai was legitimate. And it wasn't. Everybody knew it. But the phrase he used after a couple of weeks had passed was, well, it was consistent with democratic values. It was consistent with a free election. Well, consistent with does not mean it's in compliance. And anybody can read the Fourth Amendment and look at the court order to Verizon and see that it's not even consistent. Because it says there must be probable cause that a crime was committed, there has to be a court order specific to the premises. I don't have the language in front of me, but that's consistent. I'm consistent with the reading of the Fourth Amendment. And so these are weasel words. These are slippery terms coming from a professionally trained legal mind. Yeah, he used to teach constitutional law. He knows what he's doing.
And rule of law. Now, with respect to the internet and emails, this does not apply to U.S. citizens, and it does not apply to people living in the United States. And again, in this instance, not only is Congress fully apprised of it, but what is also true is that the FISA court has to authorize it.
Now, this is all very interesting because what Glenn Greenwald published, and by the way, the Washington Post got the same information about the top secret PRISM program, all they had was a partial set of PowerPoint slides. And they dutifully reported what the slides said. I didn't read any coverage that said that these techniques that they were using to access directly to Google and Facebook and Yahoo and others, it did not say that this flatly was focused on American citizens or residents of the United States, what they refer to as U.S. persons. And so the president here is denying something that was not alleged. And that tells us something. It speaks volumes. And so let me concede, because I don't know the details of the PRISM program. And since all of the companies have denied that they actively colluded with the government to permit backdoor access, there's more research to be done on this. And maybe it's true that the PRISM program only focuses on non-U.S. persons. But once again, we have more questions than answers from these assertions from President Obama.
With his defense, the programs out of the way, the president turned to a defense of his own ideals. And what we see in this next clip is a president who is having a very public argument with the 2009 version of himself. That version being the newly elected president of the United States, who said explicitly in his inaugural address that the American people reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals.
That's Chris Hayes of MSNBC.
Having said all that, you'll remember when I made that speech a couple of weeks ago about the need for us to shift out of a perpetual war mindset. I specifically said that one of the things that we're going to have to discuss and debate is how are we striking this balance between the need to keep the American people safe and our concerns about privacy. Because there are some trade-offs involved. I welcome this debate.
Oh, hold on a minute, Mr. President. Because there has been no debate. There have been people like me shouting from different corners of the country, the Fourth Amendment is being bulldozed. There have been a few people, like Ron Wyden and Tom Udall in the United States Senate, who have been constrained by their own oaths of secrecy, but have tried to signal that there's a serious problem here. There has been no debate. And while you say you welcome a debate, and now Senator Feinstein says she's willing to have hearings, it's not a real debate. And this so-called discussion of these issues was not prompted by the president's speech. On May 23rd, he didn't raise the issues of surveillance in any way, shape, or form, even as a side comment related to his desire to end perpetual war and the war footing since 9/11. He didn't touch surveillance at all in that speech. And so, again, it's a false notion to suggest that somehow the president welcomes this debate. He has tried to stifle it, using the state secrets privilege, using the denial of standing. Every available method has been used to stifle any discovery, any accountability. The immunity that was granted to the phone companies in the FISA law is another example of that. So I'm sorry, it's laughable to hear the president say this.
I think it's healthy for our democracy. I think it's a sign of maturity, because probably 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we might not have been having this debate.
We're not having a debate.
And I think it's interesting that there's some
not so
folks
far
on the left, but also some folks on the right who are now worried about it, who weren't very worried about it when it was a Republican president. I think that's good.
Well, hold on. I have been even-handed about this. I have hammered Bush as heavily as I have hammered Obama, because my fundamental is the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and in specific here, the Fourth Amendment. And that's why it's even surprised me how much of a critic I've been of this administration.
That we're having this discussion. But I think it's important for everybody to understand, and I think the American people understand, that there are some trade-offs involved.
Now, here the president is going into false choices. Listen carefully, because he describes trade-offs at each extreme as if there is zero middle ground.
Yeah. I came in with a healthy skepticism about these programs. My team evaluated them. We scrubbed them thoroughly. We actually expanded some of the oversight, increased some of the safeguards.
We have to take his word for this, and I won't call him out on that. He may have scrubbed them. He may have enhanced some safeguards. There's no public evidence of same.
But my assessment and my team's assessment was that they help us prevent terrorist attacks. And the modest encroachments on privacy that are involved in getting phone numbers or duration without a name attached and not looking at content, that...
Well, let me stop him here. These are not modest incursions. And if you got my phone number, you've got my name. The idea that it's not linked to individuals and that no one ever, ever listens to the content of these calls is so far-fetched. I mean, what kind of a comedy does it come out of?
On, net, it was worth us doing. Some other folks may have a different assessment of that.
I do.
But I think it's important to recognize that you can't have 100% security and also then have 100% privacy.
Mr. President, that's the false choice. And you know better. You're the one who campaigned, and even in your inaugural speech, said that we shouldn't trade liberty for security, particularly a false sense of security. And no one labors under the illusion that we have 100% privacy. But these programs invade our privacy 100%. They violate the Constitution 100%. They are unacceptable under the American system. And you are trying to rationalize by presenting the false choice that it's either 100% security or 100% privacy. That is simply not true. And there are mechanisms, not the FISA court, but the federal courts, where if they work according to the scheme, and they often are politicized and punches are pulled, so I have no illusions about that. But if you use our federal court system properly, and there is an honest adversarial proceeding where the government doesn't have the advantage of being able to whisper secrets to the judge that the judge can't divulge even to the other side, then we can adjudicate the balance of security and privacy on a case-by-case basis. But you are justifying the wholesale dragnet surveillance of every American, and as I said, virtually every one of us is completely innocent. And to violate our rights and then just say, well, you know, I gotta have some trade-offs here. Sorry, I don't buy it.
And zero inconvenience. We're going to have to make some choices as a society.
Well, those choices were made without our participation or consent. And our elected leaders have sold us out. The biggest figure in that sellout is Dianne Feinstein, but my friend Nancy Pelosi was briefed on these programs. Don't know that she tried to blow the whistle. She didn't even try the way Ron Wyden has. And certainly the Republicans all embraced Bush's expansion of presidential power. All the Republicans have been silent as Obama has extended or expanded those programs, and most Democrats have too. And so to say we get to make a choice? I'm sorry, that's just a really phony notion.
All right, and we'll have a chance to...
So here the president is trying to wrap up, and listen carefully, because he leaves the podium, and then a male reporter shouts a question, and usually the president ignores shouted questions, and Obama came back and talked for another 6 or 7 minutes.
Talk further during the course of the next couple of days. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
You're welcome to the debate.
I don't welcome leaks, because... there's a reason why these programs are classified. I think that there is a suggestion that somehow any classified program is a quote-unquote secret program, which means it's somehow suspicious. But the fact of the matter is, in our modern history, there are a whole range of programs that have been classified because when it comes to, for example, fighting terror, our goal is to stop folks from doing us harm. And if every step that we're taking to try to prevent a terrorist act is on the front page of the newspapers or on television, then presumably the people who are trying to do us harm are going to be able to get around our preventive measures.
Now, wait a minute. First of all, the president is falling into the Bush trap by referring to fighting terror. It's a concept. It's a strategy. It's not a person. It's not an entity. We're fighting terrorists. We're fighting acts of terrorism. But you can't fight terror. And you cannot spy your way out of it. You simply cannot stop every potential criminal act, whether it is related to what's widely defined as terrorism or just a basic criminal undertaking. And this notion that our government is powerful enough to, you know, intervene and stop people before they commit a crime, and that the acceptable trade-off is that we're all under surveillance, we're all suspects all of the time, well, that's flatly irrational. And to me, it's unacceptable. Here the president is trying to use fear to persuade people to act against their self-interest.
That's why these things are classified. But that's also why we set up congressional oversight.
Oh, yeah. Here we
These
go.
These are the
again.
Folks you all vote for as your representatives in Congress, and they're being fully briefed on these programs.
No.
And if, in fact, there were abuses taking place, presumably, those members of Congress could raise those issues.
Now, wait a goddamn minute.
They're empowered.
There have been abuses. That is a fact. And no member of Congress has attempted, through the ordinary and standard channels, to fix that. And so for the president to make this statement relies on the ignorance of the low-information voter. And he knows he can bet on that.
We also have federal judges that we put in place who are not subject to political pressure. They've got lifetime tenure as federal judges, and they're empowered to look over our shoulder.
Yeah. The only ones who get on the FISA court are the ones who are known to be part of the dark side of our government and willing to bend the law to protect it.
At the executive branch to make sure that these programs aren't being abused. So we have a system in which some information is classified, and we have a system of checks and balances to make sure that it's not abused.
Well, Mr. President, that's a nice civics lesson, but that's not the way it works in real life and in the real world, and you know it. There's much more news today, but I want to focus on these critical issues, and I'll just point out that the Obama administration is up in arms about these unauthorized leaks. Dianne Feinstein and John McCain want the ultimate penalties for Ed Snowden. And he will probably receive a life sentence. I hope I'm wrong about that, but I can't imagine a different outcome. So, against these unauthorized leaks, we get authorized leaks. The third element that Glenn Greenwald reported last week is the super secret memo about cyber warfare. So, on Saturday, lead story in the New York Times, based on unnamed American officials leaking to Tom Shanker and David Sanger. Headline reads, U.S. helps allies trying to battle Iranian hackers. And the whole gist of the story is that those evil Iranians are using cyber warfare against Saudi Arabia and other American allies. And so we are now offering cyber support to Middle Eastern allies. They didn't name the countries, but the most active are considered to be Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain. No mention is made that we have been on the offensive in cyber warfare against Iran since at least 2006 with the Stuxnet program. It's never presented in the context that Iran is reacting to our cyber attacks It's the evil Iranian government. And I don't like the Iranian government. It's not like I can defend them. But we characterize them in cartoon fashion. That's where Dr. Evil is. And he's running cyber war games against us. But we're doing it all the time. We have an aggressive cyber warfare program. It has not been debated by our leaders. It has not been discussed by the American people. None of those debates that Obama just welcomed has ever covered cyber warfare. And the way it is spun in the American media is that we're the good guys, and that we're out there just trying to maintain against the evildoers arrayed against us. We got a lot of work to do, friends. And I thank Edward Snowden for putting his life and his whole future on the line to try to save us. That's why he did it.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until